This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Dr. Mabua Makomisane, of course, and who is the chairperson of the Limpopo Independent Practitioners Association, LIPA, about a high-profile inquiry into alleged racial profiling, and you'll remember this a few years ago, into alleged racial profiling by medical schemes and administrators that has ground to a halt. And I'm wondering why the profile or the inquiry has ground to a halt, and I'm hoping that the good doctor will tell us, over an apparent deadlock between the industry regulator and an investigating panel chaired, of course, and we are now going to, of course, now talk to Dr. Mabua Makomisane. And let me bring the good doctor into the conversation. Doctor, the welcome to Power 98.7.
Good evening, Denzel, and good evening to the listeners of Power FM.
Good evening, and all the way from Limpopo, I take it.
Yes, absolutely. I'm here in the region of Africa.
You haven't decided, as other people do, you know, when they eventually, you know, grow up and start professional lives, they want to come to this thing called Gauteng. You're on the other side. You're like, nope, this is where life actually happens.
Absolutely, I think. But more importantly, our people need us mostly here in Limpopo.
So spot on. So spot on. Here's an important issue, and I remember this pretty well. And so a few years ago, if not about a year and a half ago, or about a year ago, there were a few black medical practitioners, and a group of them who had come together after a while, and who had decided that actually medical aids in their practices, the way that they were practicing and dealing with black doctors and black practitioners, was in essence racist, and that in that racism was being actually, and I'm just talking off the top of my head as I remember the story, and I've got it in here in front of me, but I want to see if what I have in my head is something similar to what you'll tell us. And that, of course, this group of black doctors and practitioners were actually accusing various huge medical schemes of being racist, in the sense that they were dispensing differently. And also, there was a conversation that when fraud and other corrupt activities were being investigated and or being looked at, they unduly made suggestions that it was from particularly the black practitioners that, you know, we saw the fraud and corruption and other forms of criminality coming in. Would that be the broad brushstroke of what happened a few years ago?
It's actually quite a broad one, I think, but I think just to bring it to perspective for you, it is not just a few doctors or group of doctors.
Yes.
It is actually our sister organization, which is called the NHCPA, which was led under by Dr. Donald Gumede and Dr. Prudence Butele at the time. But I think just to bring the issue into proper context, this is one of the biggest institutional racism that we've seen in our country since the dawn of democracy. And I think just to explain, the bone of contention is a global concept which is called fraud, waste, and abuse. And I think just to break it down, in any country that has some form of medical insurance, this is what is being seen everywhere, where fraud is defined as somebody knowledgeably or doing with intent some sort of a fraud when you're doing a claim. And the waste would be probably if somebody is over servicing and they're giving more medication than they should, or they're doing procedures that they shouldn't be doing. And abuse will be maybe you're doing things unknowingly or you're using the wrong code. And this is a global phenomenon, and it's a huge problem in healthcare, and it actually costs healthcare quite a bit. But just to give you some figures, in the USA, there was a Medicaid program where they lose about 30% to fraud. And in India, similarly figures. And in the UK, with the NHS, which is working quite well, they also report a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse. In fact, the WHO came out with the figure to say food waste and abuse cost about $68 billion a year.
I saw that figure.
Globally.
I saw that figure.
So it's quite a huge figure. But what was interesting about this was that the perpetrators, and you would see that the majority of these countries do not have a lot of black professionals working, yet the food waste and abuse happens. And South Africa, unfortunately, is not spared on this.
Mm.
But between 2010 and 2019, we started to see a trend where more and more black people are being persecuted and they're being called fraudsters. And when we started to look at the data that was being produced by some of the medical aids, they were quite shocking to us. You know, when we saw the list of doctors that were banned, almost 94% of the doctors, pharmacists, the psychologists, and social workers were black people.
What's that percentage?
94%.
Wow.
Of the people that were blocked to not be seen by patients.
Yeah.
About 94%. And remember, this is a country where the proportionality of blacks and non-blacks healthcare professionals has not yet reached the proportions of the demographics. So we still have a large number of white professionals when compared to blacks in proportionality. You had, when you look at the medical aid, 94% of them, these professionals, were being seen as fraudulent.
Mm.
But also one of the shocking ones, social workers, they were all 100% of them were black people.
Mm.
And for us, that was quite shocking. And what we began to realize...
Is the social workers banned and blocked?
Yes, this is
sure.
These are social workers all over the country.
Mm.
And in fact, one of the findings that we saw was that almost 50% of social workers and psychologists that you know have been accused of fraud in the country that are black.
Mm.
So it is quite astonishing. And what we have learned, you know, medical aid in the country are governed by a piece of law, which is called the Medical Schemes Act.
Yeah.
And in that Schemes Act, there is a section called Section 59. And this section allows that if medical aid pay you unduly so, or they suspect that there's some fraud, they're allowed to be able to claw back that money on future claims that you're going to be doing.
Mm.
But this is not read in solitude. You know, it is read together with the regulation of that particular act, which is regulation number 6, which states that all... If a fraudulent activity is suspected, you're supposed to inform the person in writing, and this must be done within 30 days of the submission of the claim, and then an investigation had to happen with it at that particular time.
Mm.
Now, what has been happening in this country and what you believe has been quite fraudulent and quite wrong, illegal, that has been done, is that medical aid began to take the law into their own hands. Now, if you look at the list of people that are being persecuted, almost 94 to 100% of them are black people. And this is how they dealt with this issue.
Mm.
Now, they claim that they've got two systems that they follow. One is a whistleblowing system, and one is an algorithm that they have in their IT system, whereby it flags practitioners. Say, for example, if Denzel, in your practice, you're doing a lot of HIV tests, or you've got a lot of program where you're doing, you're checking your patient's cholesterol, and they feel that you are an outlier, then the system flags you, and it says that you are being fraudulent. Now, what they do, based on that information, they come to you and say, because of this particular incident that happened, we believe that you have been fraudulent for the past 3 years. And therefore, we want all the money that you've claimed on this particular procedure for the past 3 years. And for me, Denzel,
so that was what the practice at the time. That is what was happening.
It is still the practice even today. And
no, I'm just saying. I'm saying before there was, you know, a noise made about it. Before there was before the system was disrupted. This was how the practice ultimately behaved. The system behaved in
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. The system behaves that way. For me, Denzel, it's like almost as if a traffic officer stops you at a stop sign because you did not stop at a stop sign, and they say that instead of giving you a ticket for today, I suspect that you've been crossing stop signs for the past 3 years, and therefore I'm going to give you, and you look like you drive quite often, and I'll give you tickets.
And you drive a fast car.
Absolutely. And it makes no sense. There was no science to it. There was no law that governs this. It was pure bullying that was being happening. And unfortunately, it was only happening to 94% of black professionals.
Sure.
They would then go ahead and break the law even further and demand that you give them the patient's record, health record. It means that if Denzel, you are my patient, and you belong to a certain scheme, and that scheme wants to investigate me, you are suffering from a condition that you do not want anyone to know about. They want me to give you that info, to give them that information. So that they can be able to verify this claim, which is quite problematic. And there was bullying. Doctors were made to sign what we call acceptance of guilt, and they were expected to pay back money. So they would come up usually with a round figure. Maybe they can come and say 3 million rands has to be paid back over a specific period of time.
And practitioners were doing that, paying back.
They were expected to do that, and there were major consequences about that, Denzel. But what they would say is that if you do not pay this money, we are going to report you to your health council, of which there is a likelihood that you could be struck off the roll, or they can then put you in indirect payment. So indirect payment basically means that if you come and see me, medical aid will rather pay you than pay me. Then you are at liberty to decide whether you're going to pay the doctor or not. And that has been problematic. In fact, 99% of the time, patients never really come back to pay the doctor. But the consequences that occurred following that time period is that we started to see a lot of black healthcare professional practices closing down. Because imagine if they're saying they wanted 3 million, 4 million rand to pay back. Like, there's no way you can be able to pay back. If you use that money to buy medication, to pay staff, to pay rent, there's no way that money can come back.
And there was no, exit. And there was no exit from it.
No, there was no exit from it. Once you sign, either you sign or either way you're going to get struck off the roll or some heavy consequence is going to happen to you. We have a long list now, Denzel, and this is quite pity and it's quite sorrow that of healthcare professionals who have committed suicide following this particular interrogation, because many of our members were being called to say they need to come to the head office in Sandton, and you find about six men sitting there, and they interrogate you quite heavily about what they suspect you have done without any evidence. And a lot of threats that would happen. You know, a lot of us are really just good at seeing patients. We're not lawyers, we don't debate, and we're really good at what we do when we see patients. Many of our doctors are now have become alcoholics following this, and they're dysfunctional. You know, and those that end up surviving this type of interrogation cannot be able to improve their practice because their funds are being drained out and they're being sucked out. You know, they can't improve their practices. Their practices are not able to offer the value that our community is able to, that our community deserves.
Maboa, can I ask you one? Can I ask you one question just to go back to, and I let it, I picked it up at that particular point. For clarity's sake, let me ask you this, and I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate with you. When you say they wanted the names of the patients, they suspected there was fraud, and they said pay us, you know, a certain amount of money, because this obviously, you know, we suspect has been going on, and we need, you know, to see your patient list. In a different way, when they suggest to see your patient list, could it not be in relation to, we think that you have, where other people say they have ghost workers, people might have ghost patients? You don't think it's in relation to that? You think it's more sinister?
No. So, Denzel, they're not asking for the patient list. And in fact, when we look at our membership, right, and in fact, this is what came out from the inquiry, where there's a long list of things that are required. One, they're going to ask for the patients that came to the practice on the space. So where they signed, they're going to ask for to see which machines you have in your practice. They're going to ask to know if how many people are working in the practice. It's a comprehensive list. Then they're going to ask, and this is what I'm talking about. They're going to ask where I write my notes to say, Denzel is suffering from a mental illness because he believes that his grandmother is bewitching him, and so on and so on and so on. That information written exactly like that has to be given to a third party who is going to look at whether or not what had happened. And that is highly confidential, and our regulator does not allow us to do that.
No, absolutely.
And what also came out from the inquiry as well, then, now that you bring it up, is that when we look at our white members and our black members, the 6% that did receive that type of inquiry, they only asked for that list only. So the batch of requests that was requested when you compare between non-blacks and non-blacks was quite different, and the way they were treated was completely different. So in fact, we are really talking about 100% of the blacks that were actually on that list, because the six was really treated completely different. And this is why the NHCPA, together with the solutionists, went and complained about this, and that is why the inquiry happened in the beginning of May. In 2019, and a lot of interesting outcomes came from that inquiry.
Sure, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the outcomes of that particular inquiry, and also, do you think it took pretty long to get to the point where we actually had some findings? And let's get to the clarity of that inquiry. Is it the final inquiry report that's out, or is it an interim inquiry report that's out? Which one are we dealing with?
So at this stage, it is an interim report that came out, which was pending submission from members. But at the time, in 2019, once this issue was brought up, the commission did agree to appoint an independent panelist, which was led by Advocate Ngubengile Ntombi.
Yes.
And also, you remember, at the same time, the Human Rights Commission decided to also run a parallel process. Mm. But eventually, the Human Rights Commission decided to rather wait for the CMS process to carry on.
Mm.
Now, one of the interesting things that came out from that particular inquiry was that, you know, our own health professions council, this is the council that basically governs how doctors should conduct themselves in the country, they reported that the complaints that they received from the general population about practitioners, about any issue related to practitioners, was 5 to 11. So 5 blacks for every 11 whites were reported for doing anything that could be seen as against the practice of medicine.
Mm.
But when you look at the statistics from medical aid, it indicates that about 25 blacks were reported versus one white person. This for us was quite shocking, and it just shows to us that does it mean that black people are more fraudulent.
Because that's the narrative that's created.
So it was quite shocking to see that that it's only medical aid that really see that as an issue. But one of the groundbreaking, and this left our jaws down following these findings, was that this algorithm that this medical aid totally believes on was heavily scrutinized to look at exactly how does it work, and does it have any form of biasness against black people?
Mm.
And and the terms of reference for that particular analysis of this algorithm that they used was from about 2012 to 2019, and which picked up that black people are 50% more likely to be picked up by that algorithm.
Mm.
So if you're to put a black practitioner and a white practitioner while practicing exactly the same way, the system is likely to pick up a black person more frequently.
The programming, the algorithm was programmed to pick up the black individual.
Absolutely. And in 2013, between 2013 and 2017, for the doctors, particularly GPs, it was seen to be twice as likely for a black person to be picked up as fraudulent. And interestingly, and the black counselors were 3 times as likely to be picked up. So these are counselors and psychologists were likely to be picked up as fraudulent and against their white counterparts. And when we look at it in overall terms, now 3 major medical aids were really being assessed on that day because they're the biggest and they really have the bulk of the industry. And they found that Discovery, about 35%, it had a 35% biasness against blacks as well. And GEMS, which is a government employees medical scheme, had about 80% biasness against black people. And the day before this report was released in January 2021, GEMS decided to go and have a court interdict so that this report is not released, and which was quite worrying for us to say a medical aid that is largely representing government and the black employees is the one that is really not wanting this report to be
The numbers there is quite staggering too. Considering how the layout of what the civil service looks like.
Absolutely, it's quite staggering, and that was not the list of it. Med scheme, which has got a lot of medical aid under it.
Yeah.
These are including Bonnet Health and the rest. Was found to be 330% more biased against black people than than their white counterparts.
Mm.
And they have been throwing back money from practitioners for years, you know. And what really pains us at this stage is that medical aid will then go and brag to say that we have been able to get back, you know. I mean, Discovery was able to say that they got back about 400 million rand from fraud, waste, and abuse through this illegal process that they've been following. But if you look at the report, you realize that this is 400 million rand that is coming from innocent people.
Mm.
This is 400 million of blood money because people have died following this this inquiry. You know,
Mabowa, so you've got an interim report that speaks to all of this, and so the interim report has been released. You've also had a stint in Parliament. And the ultimate formal report, what's the issue there? Why are we stuck with the interim report? And why are we engaging an interim report and not the final report at this particular point?
Yeah, so this is what the major problem is for us. You know, and when this report was released on the 19th of January in 2021, we were quite satisfied that the process has been followed. It taken almost 2 years for the inquiry to conclude. And it came out with this staggering outcome.
Mm.
And we also understood, and we were given about 6 weeks to say that after 6 weeks, which was a month and a half, so somewhere mid-February towards March, there's going to be the final report that will come out.
Mm.
And in that 6 weeks, we are going to ask practitioners to anyone or any interested parties to make comment on the interim report. And we did that. Many of us wrote thousands of input on that report so that the panels can be able to produce it.
Mm.
But even up until today, we do not have that report. But instead, we have a lot of finger pointing that has been happening.
Mm.
The registrar of CMSA, which is the Council of Medical Scheme, is saying that they are waiting for the final report from Advocate Nolaye Tombi.
Mm-hmm.
Nolaye Tombi is claiming that he did write a proposal to them of what's required, including financial structure that they require for them to be able to finish this. We assume that there is a bill that needs to be paid from there. But, the registrar again comes back to say they have not received that particular documentation directly from Nolaye Tombi. They received it to one of the panelists. So for us, that is quite problematic because it's finger pointing, and that only leads us to one thing, Denzel, to understand one thing, to say that there is likely to be a third party in this equation who does not want or who will not benefit from
the report emerging. Mm.
Absolutely, yeah. Because what it means is that if this piece of the law was indeed used illegally, the money that was clawed back has to be paid back to the practitioner, because no due process was being followed. And then the report also suggests that the Council of Medical Scheme has to come up with a proper process that has to be followed, because all of us agree that fraud, waste, and abuse is a problem globally, and it is a problem in this country as well. And we need to be able to deal with it properly.
Mm.
It can't be that only black people are the ones that are fraudulent. When you look at the global picture, this is not what we see at all. In fact, sometimes it's the contrary. And how do you say that in South Africa this is the picture?
So, Mabowa,
when I was painting the picture
previously and suggesting how I understood the story at the time, And I said to you, that's how I understood the story at the time. You said it's still continuing even today. And is it then still continuing even today because we haven't seen the light of day of the report? Or is everything you know, so dependent on the report emerging and then having to deal with the content of this particular report? Or is it an impossibility to then begin to deal with some of the measures that are spoken to in the interim report? Because ultimately, I'm thinking there won't be much of a difference between the interim report and the final report.
This is what we expect as well. We don't expect a huge difference between the two.
Mm.
But as we speak now, many of our members are still receiving letters to come to Santon, to come and discuss, to submit patient's files, to pay back the money if they don't, or to be reported. This is still happening.
Mm.
But you're quite right. If the report is to come out ultimately, a lot of changes have to happen, including the changing of the piece of law that is there. And I think that is going to be our next move, to say, changes have to happen, but also we need to go back because the law has been broken over the past many years. We need to correct that as well. So that needs to happen, and the bullying that is occurring now towards black practitioners has to stop, because the majority of these practitioners are innocent. They're being persecuted because of the color of their skin.
Why is the bullying there? Is it an unequal balance of forces? What gives the one so much power in essence? Basically what I'm trying to say is, are the companies that drive the sort of engagements white? And I think that's a simply put, you know, are the medical schemes in essence white, and the practitioners that are being dealt with, are they black? In essence, is that the scenario there? Because when we talk of bullying, you know, and all sort of things, I'm not understanding the weight. What gives the one so much power over the other?
So it's in two ways, Dango. In South Africa, the private sector is funded in two ways. One, 20% is out of pocket, so the money that you take out of your pocket to go and pay, and 80% is by medical aid. So it means that they're the biggest funder, they're the biggest payer. So if I have a practice, I'm likely to have 80% of my patients being paid through medical aid. In some cases, in fact, one of the testimonies that we had was 90%. Now, this becomes bullying in that the medical aid holds the financial vein, the financial blood vein of your practice.
Mm.
So if they decide that they're going to stop paying you tomorrow because they can, then they will.
What drives the racial agenda? If it's about a money transaction, ultimately, you know, and it doesn't really matter who's utilizing, you know, the medical system. If the patient ultimately is paying and the medical aid is paying, and it doesn't, let's for example just use numericals 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, what's driving the racial agenda?
Denzel, I think you've asked an age-old question. You know, I'll ask it back to you to say, in the past, why is it that you would have swimming pools where black people cannot go in and white people can go in, when either one of them can still pay the same rent and same value? You know, why is it that certain people are not allowed to buy houses in certain places when you're really paying the same amount of money? It's an age-old question. It's why we need to understand where racism comes from. Why is racism there? So the question. This question remains. It's not about money. It's really about when you see a problem, you probably look for the weakest and the one that you don't like to be able to deal with the problem. That's what we think. We don't know. But what the picture that we're seeing from this particular report suggests that there is definitely discrimination against a certain group of people. And this is definitely unconstitutional. So it's wrong in many, many ways in terms of the law and in terms of the constitution.
Mabo, what's the next move, bro?
So the next move now is that we are calling upon all associations to come together to be able to deal with this matter head on. We need to take this matter to Parliament. We want to call upon all professionals, black and white, to be able to deal with the discrepancies that have been happening in this country in terms of medical aid funding and institutional racism. But I think more importantly, we want our patients to know the disparity that the professionals are going through. So when you as a patient come to my practice and I tell you that I do not see a specific medical aid, it's not because I don't want to see you. is because of the institutional issues that are there. You know, this is and this is the impact that has been there in the many communities. Imagine a practice that is sitting in a rural area and is servicing the whole community. And because of that, it's seeing a large number of people and it's an outlier. Then it gets blocked from seeing medical education. That entire community is compromised. So patients are really compromised. But similarly with patients who have got a good relationship with their doctor, and that doctor all of a sudden cannot see that particular scheme, that relationship is compromised, and the entire healthcare outcomes of those patients are definitely compromised. And inevitably, this is what ends up leading to you, Denzel, now paying more money to your medical aid on a monthly basis because many of these monies that are flowed back don't go back to your account. They literally go back to paying bonuses of bonuses and different costs to medical aid. But you don't benefit as a patient in any shape or form from this exercise that they're doing.
Well, Mabowa, I think we're going to have more and more conversations as this develops. Thank you so much, Brood, for joining me here on Power Perspective tonight.
Thank you very much, Denzel, and good evening.
Thank you. That's Dr. Mabowa Makomisane joining us there, chairperson of the Limpopo Independent Practitioners Association, the LIPA.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.